is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and of course, always my co-host Andy Beham is here.
Hey Dave, how are we doing today?
I'm really tired of winter.
Yeah. February 72nd is not looking so pretty anymore.
Oh man, I don't mind having a major snowstorm in November or December, but April I'm getting a little tired.
No, and that was a heavy one.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to mess up my turkey hunting a little bit.
There's a chance of it. I was a little sad I didn't get drawn, but third week turkey hunting's not looking so bad right now.
Now you're looking like a genius.
Yeah, pretend that was on purpose.
You know, the other thing is, this is a tough time of the year for wildlife. You know, they've made it through winter. Spring should be popping up right now, and we're going to have deer dropping fawns as early as this middle of April and going forward. And
I noticed some of the find food.
Oh, I've noticed some of the pheasants are just struggling trying to find anything out in those fields. So
yeah,
not a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun.
No, hopefully the snow's done. They're showing some 50 degree weather in their near future.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, it's hard to be positive right now.
good luck with all that. Well, today, Andy, we're going to be talking to Pete Mergens with Professional Pride Realty, who happens to be our sponsor. And this is a show that we've wanted to do for quite a while. Pete, of course, not only has a lot of realty knowledge, but also he does a lot of stuff outdoors. And we're going to pick his brain a little bit and get a little bit of his background on hunting and fishing also at the same time.
Yeah, it'll be a good show.
But the main topic today is we want to talk about perhaps buying a cabin, vacation land, hunting property. We all enjoy that getaway. And I have a feeling that Pete's going to share with us there's some things that we need to think about before we jump in.
No thinking. Just do it. Just do it.
I have some friends that have some real nightmares where they've purchased a cabin and it's become nothing but a money pit.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that.
So
after that long introduction.
Without further ado.
Well, welcome, Pete. How are you doing?
Welcome, guys. Thank you very much. It's not often a guy gets a good introduction like that. That's pretty good.
Hey, Pete, why don't you go ahead and first tell us a little bit about the business, Professional Pride Realty, where you're located at. We're very proud that you are a sponsor for us here.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty proud to actually sponsor the show because the outdoors is so near and dear to me. But we are located at 203 3rd Street West. We're on the west side of Highway 3 on the same side of the street as the quarterback club on 3rd, but we're across the street from the quarterback. So we're right fronting Highway 3. It's a great location. A chamber used to be next to us, but of course they've moved downtown here. So,
and do you, what type of things do you specifically deal in? Is it just, homes or is it businesses?
Yep, we do specialize in residential real estate. So, that's probably our target is, dealing with a person's personal residence or home. But we also sell a little bit of commercial, and we also do some ag properties and some, hunting land and in cabins and such.
Now, Pete, I was trying to think back on it today. I've known you for quite a while. Our kids have gone to school together. When was it that you started Professional Pride?
Well, actually, our anniversary is coming up here in May. It'll be 7 years in May.
Okay.
And it seems like yesterday.
I'm sure. Time flies.
It does.
Now, Pete, Andy was telling me a little bit that you're no stranger to getting outside and doing a little hunting, a little fishing and stuff. I think it'd be fun for everyone to understand one of the reasons you sponsored this is your own interest in the outdoors.
Yeah, the people that know me will tell you without a doubt that I'm an avid outdoors person. I'm a really seventh generation removed Mergens that is an outdoorsman. My great-great-great-great-grandfather dating back to Peter von Mergens from Prussia of 1847 Actually settled here with his wife. And when I say settled here, they settled in Shakopee, Minnesota.
This sounds like you have royalty in your blood.
You know, it's funny you say that because it's kind of a joke since finding all this out just recently, in fact, that Von Mergens was a royalty in Prussia.
Ah.
And so I didn't know anything about this. I talk pretty tough, but... I didn't know anything about it till I called my my uncle Bud, who's kind of the family family tree part of the family, if you will, and he explained to me my lineage, and it was really fun to learn about that. But some of the irony that came of it is they settled in what's called Maretown. Yep. As in Marystown, but it's pronounced Marystown, which is right in Shakopee. And if you'll note, I think, it's one of the exits, the new exits on the highway down there is Marystown Road. And all this came about this spring. I was goose hunting with my son for the first time through a program from the DNR, which helps young kids who don't have opportunities to get in the field and haven't hunted before. So we signed up for it, and he got to go out with a mentor and hunt on a pond here in on Marystown Road.
Was this snow goose hunting?
No, it was last fall during the regular duck season. Okay. So, but finding all this out from my uncle, I found out that. Literally to the day that we were hunting, so that was in October sometime, my great-great-great-great-grandfather and his wife settled in Marystown, and we were hunting right off of Marystown Road.
Wow.
I mean, it was really incredible to think that my grandparents may have been hunting in that exact slough that we were hunting in.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Isn't that a cool thought?
It was.
When you think about that. You know, Andy and I like to talk about hunting heritage, you know, passing that along to the next generation. You can actually trace it all the way back.
It was generations. Literally out of happenstance that I found all that out, but it is near and dear to me to keep kids hunting and keep introducing kids to the outdoors because, as you guys well know, it's a sad state that we're running into. Licenses continue to be on the decline. And if people are busy and they don't have time to go hunting and fishing anymore. So,
well, and who's going to be an advocate for the fields and the streams and the lakes without another generation of hunters?
Absolutely. I read something recently about in the U.S., the average duck hunter's age is now 50.
Wow.
That's a little scary.
Yeah.
You know, that we're starting to lose that generation. And non-hunters should be concerned about that because the hunting organizations... Ducks Unlimited, Pheasant Forever, the National Wild Turkey Federation, they raise more money for habitat and do more good work for the outdoors. It would be a vastly different looking state without them.
Well, I think there's starting to be a lot more programs like that mentor program. I know when we were at the Pheasant Opener, the week after they had their mentor hunt where you can sign up and to have someone take you out in the field. They control the dog and they don't even have a gun with them. You're out there to be the shooter and they're just taking you out. And I think that's becoming more known that there is an issue here. We got to do something about it. So you're seeing more of those programs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mike Curry down at the Department of Natural Resources has kind of spearheaded this. And Mike is a friend from many years ago as well. My family used to own a taxidermy and bait shop in Burnsville, and we had met Mike many years ago, so I have stayed in contact with him, and Mike had sent out a few emails and things, and that's what caused us to sign up for it. I, in recent years, haven't hunted much because I had some knees repaired, and my son hadn't
the age of the average
exactly. So my son, having not really been in the field, he's 13 years old, I signed up for it, and what an incredible program it was because they sent us down to the Horse and Hunt Club where we got to, the evening before, get paired up with a mentor. And that mentor had everything planned out to the T, where we were going to meet the next day, where we were going to hunt. And I did not hunt with them. It was actually on the youth waterfowl opener. So actually, it was probably in September.
Okay.
Everything just couldn't have gone any better. So this mentor physically, you know, had everything ready to go, loaded my son Patrick up in the John boat, and I stayed on shore, but I was able to get within maybe 30 yards of where the blind was. And so I got to hear much of the conversation, and the mentor did an amazing job, you know, explaining why he's setting the decoys out, playing the wind in such a capacity, right to calling the birds in. My son ended up shooting 3 Canada geese and 2 ducks that day.
Oh, wow.
So it was just an incredible experience.
So is Patrick hooked?
Oh, he's hooked. Yeah, he's hooked.
You know, more than actually, I know, I'm sure he was excited getting the geese and the ducks, but just the whole thing about the planning, the setup of the decoys.
Yeah.
I always find that strategy, you know, really interesting.
Well, it's one of those things you're not going to learn from YouTube or reading online. Go out, learn it from a person.
Yeah.
And it's a knowledge that needs to be passed down because there are intricacies on how successful you're going to be. So at least those knowledges are being passed down.
I always find it interesting hunting with my son, who's 34. He can't leave the decoys alone. He's got it all set up. Oh, no, we got to make this minor change, this minor change. It's just kind of humorous to watch one of those guys.
And then I picture myself coaching my daughter in hockey, where somehow at 11, she already knows way more than me. Getting him to listen is another challenge.
I'm very fortunate. As I told you before, seventh generation removed in terms of hunting. All my ancestors were big into living off the land. My dad was no exception in taking my two brothers and myself out hunting when we were kids, and passed on just an amazing tradition that is really important to me, and I have done the same with my son. And it's every weekend, it's what we're thinking about next.
Well, I know I can attest from years ago when Lauren was in Patrick's class of, oh, that Patrick, he gets to leave early again. They're going hunting this weekend, or they're going ice fishing this weekend. She had a little bit of jealousy going on. I said, do you want to go out hunting with me? No.
The interesting thing is we have been able to utilize that. Patrick knows he can't leave school early or take time off unless he's getting straight A's.
Ah, yeah.
And that's the deal. It just kind of worked into that, and it's worked so well, I can't even tell you. I hope he's not listening.
This is going to date me, but back when I was in school and I had my farm permit, I always had an excuse that I had to leave early to head home.
It was harvest season. It was planting season.
Yeah, I'd be out pheasant hunting or on my duck blind.
Just working the ditches. Yeah. And
Pete, is there a particular type of hunting you prefer over one over the other? Is it deer hunting, waterfowl, upland game, or all of the above?
Well, it's kind of all of the above, and it's kind of changed over the years. I certainly love to waterfowl hunt. That's probably been my strongest passion growing up, but it's changed over the years. I have dogs as well. I have a Chesapeake Bay Retriever. I've had I'm on my fourth Chesapeake now in my hunting career, and so I kind of went from being someone who loves to hunt waterfowl to being a huge pheasant guy. I love pheasant hunting. And while I like deer hunting, I didn't like being in the woods quite so much with all those other people. So I've kind of turned into a muzzle loader. I do like to muzzle load for deer. That's, again, something I discovered later on in life and really enjoy. I have an incredible opportunity to hunt on some good land close to us here, and so I enjoy muzzle loading and I enjoy turkey hunting, but one of my stronger passions is fishing and ice fishing. Usually with my career, I don't have a whole lot of time on weekends in the summer. I'm pretty busy. So
stands to reason.
Yeah, stands to reason in the winter
which
time,
is probably a good thing.
Exactly. In the winter time, there's not as many people out looking to purchase homes, so I've had a lake place on Lake Mille Lacs, and when I say lake place, I mean a fish house.
Okay.
On Lake Mille Lacs for 27 years now. So we have a 12-by-20 fish house, permanent house that we keep at the resort up there, and they put it on the lake and take it off the lake for us at the end of the season.
Before we get into our topic here, your opinions of what's going on Lake Mille Lacs.
I have a lot of opinions about that because I have seen the very high highs and the very low lows of the lake. And actually, the lake is in some pretty decent shape right now, aside from what people see or talk about in the newspaper and in the public. They're in the process of doing another fish study this spring. They I think intended on doing it right now as we speak, and okay. With the ice cover that's there, they're going to be hard pressed to make this happen. They had the same problem in 2013, but managed to get through it. But you know, I think it's a very difficult situation. I don't think it's being managed, and I'm not one who wants to point fingers in any direction, because I think there's a lot to blame and a lot that goes on in the management and handling of the lake. But the lake has definitely seen some changes, and it has the uncanny ability, in my opinion, to heal itself in a lot of respects. You know, many years ago, people would say, oh, you're going to the Dead Sea, people like to call it. And they meant it was the Dead Sea because they didn't go up and catch, you know, 20 walleyes on a trip. They caught three or four, and that's all they caught. But they also caught a whole bunch of perch, a whole bunch of tulipies, burbot. They caught everything under the sun. And now what's changed is we have a lake that's actually chocked full of walleyes. Trophy walleyes. We have trophy smallmouth bass. We have trophy northerns and trophy muskies. And what's actually happened, in my estimation, and a lot of people certainly would agree and some would disagree, but we've created an environment where we have a lot of eating machines out there.
Yeah.
The DNR has tried through various methods of protecting certain fish and slot fish that, you know, they believe are necessary to help replenish the lake. But what's happened is we're actually seeing male walleyes that are 22 to 24 inches. They're big.
That's an awful big male walleye.
And what you have there is basically an eating machine.
Those should be taken sooner and in your fry pan.
They should. They absolutely should. And, you know, I'm not a biologist. I just know from all my time that I've spent on that lake, I have seen the periods of time where we have six fish limits where people were keeping thousands of pounds of fish out of that lake, and it sustained itself. And that's what's changed. The whole dynamic has changed, yet the lake finds a way every time to figure itself out.
Okay. Well, Pete, let's talking about lakes. Let's get into one of our topics about buying a cabin, buying a lakefront. Having lived in Minnesota my whole life, the whole thought of going up north to a relative's cabin or my own cabin, which I don't have. I was lucky growing up. We knew other people that had cabins. But there's got to be some pitfalls in that. Let's start out with, how do you avoid the general nightmare of a cabin?
Well,
that's kind of an open-ended question there, but I have friends that were so eager to get a cabin, and it's turned out to be a nightmare for a variety of reasons. A
couple of the things that you and I were talking about off-air was just the whole thought that it's kind of a rite of passage in Minnesota to have a cabin, or the thought of having a cabin. There's a lot of family-owned cabins and a lot of things that were all brought up in the atmosphere of every Friday we head up north. And, you know, so we run into this a lot where people say, gosh, Pete, we're thinking about staying put in our house because we want to buy a cabin, or we want to downsize what we have and have less of a house and have our lake place up north. You know, when it's... what I challenge people is to do things for the right reason. Using myself as an example, I always felt that, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a cabin and I'm going to have a nice boat lift out there and I'm going to put it on a lake that I know I could maybe duck hunt on and got to be a good walleye lake and maybe have some nice panfish in it. And it wasn't until a little bit later in life that I realized, A, I didn't have enough money for that, and B, I had no time for that. And I'm fortunate because I had several friends growing up that had family cabins, and we would frequent those places, and I would see the amount of work that those people actually put into maintaining that weekend place. And so, you know, I use that when I'm out helping folks. I realize that the idea, and I'm not trying to talk people out of things, I've spent my career with my business, with Professional Pride Realty, to educate folks. We want to educate people so they're getting good information to make good decisions with. And I think that's the crux of what you're asking, is there are a lot of those little details that we need to talk about before writing offers on properties.
Okay. Well, Pete, we're going to go ahead and take a short break because we want to hear from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Well, welcome back. We're talking with Pete Mergens from Professional Pride Realty, and you're listening to us on KYMN 95.1, The One, and 1080 AM. Pete, before we took our break, we were talking about purchasing a cabin. Okay, I've decided I want to buy a cabin. I'm coming to you and said, Pete, find me a cabin. What are some of the first things that you would be asking me to really consider? Because you mentioned that you want to help us make a good decision.
Great question. The first thing that we would always want to point people in the right direction of is a good lender, first of all, to make sure that they're prepared or have the ability to go make that purchase that they might be considering.
Oh, aren't cabins extremely cheap? I can just
They can be very, very expensive, or they can be somewhat inexpensive. And that's really important that we position somebody to make an offer that is going to get accepted. So once we clear that financing hurdle and we know that that's what they're interested in, we really want to find out what it is they want to do there. Do they want a nice beach? Do they like to fish? Do they like to hunt? Do they like to water ski? Or jet ski, for example. Some lakes have restrictions because of flooding that they have to have a no wake zone, or they can't water ski within a certain distance of the beach. There's actually some, laws and regulations on the book in terms of jet skis and water skiing that affects your lake property ownership. And is there a lake association, as an example? So there's really a lot that goes into a good question and answer session with a good agent leading up to that.
Now, what if I'm so ready to get up north to my own property, but I don't have the budget yet for that cabin? Can I go get a loan just for a plot of land on a lake?
Possibly.
or are they going to require construction? Or
no, everything. The possibility of getting a loan on anything is there based on your credit and your financial ability. So, typically, if it were just a piece of bare land on a lake, as an example, you may not get a loan for more than maybe 10 or 15 years, where a cabin you may be able to get a little bit longer note on because there's a dwelling attached to the property. There's again several factors that go into what type of loan. You might have equity in the house that you're in, and you might be able to take a second mortgage and put it on the house that you're living in rather than an additional mortgage on another property. So there's a lot of options there. It depends on what your down payment is as well.
Over the last several years, it seems like a number of resorts have gone out of business, and maybe they're choosing people retiring. And I've seen where a lot of the resort cabins have been put up for sale, individual cabins. Are there some pitfalls there that I should be aware of if I'm looking at that type of a cabin?
There can be. I've seen those too, and they seem like a nice opportunity because generally they're a little less expensive.
Yeah.
Usually it's kind of bought similar to a co-op of a townhome or condo association. where you might own the structure, but you're sharing in cooperation the land or the deeded access to the water. And so, you know, the only pitfalls that I would kind of point out are that you really need to do your research in respect of what the association has laid forward. Is there a cost for maintaining the access to the lake, as an example? Is there insurance attached to that common use property that you're sharing?
Oh, these are all some costs that I probably wouldn't have considered.
Yeah, I mean, you don't think of those things, but whenever you're in a common interest community type scenario like that, you're sharing in a piece of property with other folks. So,
are those cabins typically also very close together?
They can be. Yeah, they can be pretty close.
So if I'm going up for a quiet weekend and I've got some neighbors that are going up there, this is their party cabin. I should maybe consider that?
Yep, a really good thought there. And that's, again, something you might not see on the surface until you purchase it and you're sitting there and realize that the neighbor 50 feet away is having a big, a bachelor bash that weekend.
Well, what about nowadays, too, with, you have websites, your Airbnb, VRBO, some of those where, in your opinion, do you buy a cabin and then try and offset the price by renting it out, or stay away from it and just go rent out a cabin for a week yourself on those websites?
Andy, that you bring up a really good point. I am someone who has utilized the VRBO and the Airbnb. I do think it's a really nice feature. Even for people that just are vacationing in general, they might look at a hotel that's completely booked and then go on one of these sites and you find that, gosh, there's a nice family cabin that we're finding there are lots of people who take their family cabin and realize they're really busy right now. And they rent their family cabin out for maybe 3, 4, 5 weekends out of the year. And that pays their taxes, as an example. You really need to be cognizant of what you're getting, because like anything with the internet, might look like a beautiful place, but maybe they don't, usually they're paying somebody to come in and clean and to, strip down the beds and put all new on. And you want to make sure that that's happening. So ask the right questions. Do you guys do this yourself?
If you do the right searches, there's some great deals we found. I know Sarah and I have gone and stayed for a week at a cabin, barely over $1,000 for the week. We had a dock that we could tie our boat up to. We were able to bring our dog with, nice kitchen, and just had a great time on a great lake, where other times you can tell that the photos of the cabin are taken at just the right angle to make it look nice, but it's not once you show up.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I think it's a great thing, but I think you guys have hit on a couple of things, because people change, times change, and the family that went to that family lake place every weekend, now little Jimmy or Sally is in, hockey or baseball or soccer or something, and they can't get there every weekend. It is a nice thing for people to resort to, pardon the pun, but to change their lifestyle to fill a void there. But one of the pitfalls, I think, is alienating your neighbors. And so when you're buying a property, you need to take that into consideration as well. Hey, is there any way that we can find out if these people next door are every weekend users, or, they rent? Oh, I didn't know. How often do they rent? So just getting out and knocking on some doors and saying hi to people, you'd be amazed at the kind of information you can get.
Well, and where you say, the kids getting into sports, it's funny, Sarah and I talk about, when the kids were younger and we had the free time to do it, we spent our entire time at the cabin entertaining the kids. Then they get in activities, you don't have time to go. And by the time you get time to go again, they're grown up and they want to use the cabin for their friends, not to be with their parents.
Yeah.
Pete, you mentioned taxes. So if I have a cabin in northern Minnesota, but I have a home here in Northfield, I'm kind of at the mercy of that township or city or county when it comes to taxes. I don't necessarily have a right to vote up there if they want to raise property taxes. Is that a correct way of...
That is correct, unless you're claiming residency there.
Yeah. But if I'm not claiming residence,
that could be
a pitfall for me.
It could be. It certainly could be. You are certainly at the mercy to the county or township. And, you know, we have always seen Minnesota Lake property taxes as being, expensive.
Okay.
So all things to consider when you realize that you're paying more for your taxes on your lake place than your personal residence, it might be worth not having that place and renting a nice cabin two or three times a summer and paying the same and eliminating the maintenance.
And what is your opinion if Andy and I, hey, we both would like to get a cabin together? Up there. Have you ever seen any kind of pitfalls where family, relatives, or friends go together and buy a cabin?
I have, and I can tell you...
Is that a good idea or not a good idea?
It's probably not the best idea,
okay.
and the only, usually it's meant to be a good idea that helps both parties at the time, but generally ends in a little bit of heartache, so because... Things aren't always what they appear. Feelings can get hurt, and the next thing you know, you're in a legal bound situation that you need to have this legal separation and involve the sale of a property, which means that you might not even get market value for it because you need to get out of that situation.
Are cabins a good investment?
They can be.
Okay.
To that extent, a lot of people, we were taught for many years that put the most money you can or what you can afford into the home you live in, because what a great investment that is. But did we not find out not that many years ago that it turned out to be not the greatest investment? And it holds true for cabins. So my opinion or my advice is very similar to when people ask me about buying or selling their residence. You know, people say all the time, "Oh, Pete, when is the right time? When should we sell? Should we wait till spring? Should we wait till this summer or wait till this fall? Is there a better time?" I always respond with the same thing. Buy and sell because you have to. Because the reality is you're never going to buy at the lowest low or the highest high. Or you might buy low in this instance and hope to sell high. Well, it doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't. So for the same respect, a recreational property, you need to buy because you want to use it.
Okay. We've been talking with Pete Mergens with Professional Pride Realty. Pete, let's switch it up a little bit. Let's start talking. I want to buy some land just for hunting on. Find me a piece of land. I want to go hunting on it. What do I have the possibility of running into any pitfalls there?
Yep, lots of pitfalls there, and
okay.
I get that question all the time because
my
friends and family are hunters and fishermen, so they always say, "Oh, I just need a piece of land I can deer hunt on. Can't you just find me something?" Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay.
Especially in our region that we live in down here, we're kind of in a farm belt as well. And so we have some farmland, some forested land, and all kind of mixed together. And what we find is that land values are dictated on their use. And so you might find that prime piece of land that you want, but it might have some very valuable building rights associated with it. So one piece of property might be worth more because it's able to be subdivided or built on, where another piece of property might not have any building rights on it, and the only thing you can do is recreate on it. And when that happens, the values tend to be a little bit less. So it's not often that scenario presents itself. Most property is buildable, but not all of it.
Now, when there's no building rights on it, to what extent can you not build? Can you put a permanent deer structure? Can you put in something that you can stay in, but it's not a full house? I mean, where's the cutoff there?
Well, it's really going to depend on the county that it's built in and the township that it's built in is my short answer. But to that, mainly what the driving force is, are you going to have a well? Are you going to have a septic? What is your real use? If you were going to put up a deer stand, that's no problem. You could put that up anywhere within reason.
Do you throw a camper on there for when you
camper,
go stay?
Something that you could move and take with you at any time, no problem. But if you're going to build a permanent foundation or a foundation, and move something in, and with the intent of sitting there for a long time. That, like I said, requires maybe some power or a well or septic.
Yep.
Then the county's going to want to have a little bit more to say about it.
Yeah.
Pete, a few years back, well, this is probably at least 15 years back, there was a small piece of property out for sale out near where I lived. It was 10 acres of woods. And I thought, oh, this would be a great little piece, but it was landlocked. And the only way I could see in there was through this one farmer's yard, and he kept a gate locked in there. Can people landlock you out of your own land?
They actually can.
Oh, they can.
Yeah, there or that possibility exists. It'd be difficult. I mean, you couldn't go and it's a circumstance that would have happened somehow because the initial piece of land got subdivided in such a way that there was never a deeded access to that property that was in remainder. So what I would recommend in a situation like that is to talk very nicely to that farmer and ask him if you can have access, and it might be something in perpetuity, something he's willing to sign and share in and deed to the next potential owner, or it might just be a short temporary access to it while you own it, as an example.
I could see that happening quite a bit in northern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Where you have vast stretches of woods and pieces get sold off all around.
Yeah.
So that is something to keep in mind when you're looking for some hunting property.
It is. It's always real important to not just do your research on the individual property you're thinking about buying, but your research on all the adjacent properties to it. And that's where, again, finding a good realtor in the city that you're looking at or near the area that you're looking at is so very important. If you guys asked me today, hey, Pete, dang, thanks. It was great information. I want to buy something up on Lake Superior right now. Can you help my family do this? I would tell you no, because Lake Superior is while it's beautiful and it's one of my favorite places to go, I know nothing about that real estate community there. And I would, even though I'm licensed in the state of Minnesota, I would not be truly helping you if I were to go try and sell you something up there. Is it possible? Of course it is. But I would want to make sure that you understood that that was not my forte. What I would be doing is recommending and maybe calling up there to the local real estate companies and inquiring and asking information to those brokers. Hey, who's your best agent or who sells the most lake property up on Devil's Track, as an example? I could then at least point you to a professional in that area that's going to take care of you.
What if I'm a person that's a non-hunter and I found this little piece of property right on a lake with no houses, no structure on it, and I want to purchase it just as a place to go throw my tent up? Are there some things I should really think seriously about before I do that?
There are, Dave. I mean, really, it's again finding out all the ins and outs, not just about the property you're considering, but what's going to happen around you, what's proposed for years to come, and so on and so forth. You may find that you meet the next door neighbor who's a quiet neighbor, maybe been there for 30 years, but they're going to be retiring. And they end up selling that property to somebody else who uses the adjacent property differently. And it might affect your quiet enjoyment of your property that you're intending to buy. So that research is so invaluable.
What about is there a place I can go find if that's a piece of property that floods?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that ever happen where we have a couple of dry years? Oh, this looks great.
You bet.
I purchase it. Oh, the only way I can get to it is to sit in a boat.
Yeah, in fact, there's a FEMA has a map that gets updated every year in terms of where typical flood plains are, and you can actually look at that on a website and find some of that data out.
Well, we've been talking with Pete Mergens with Professional Pride Realty right here in town. Of course, we're very proud to have him as a sponsor, and you've also been listening to us on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Pete, we're virtually out of time here, but any last little suggestions or things that people should really keep in mind, whether they're looking for that piece of vacation property, that cabin, or that hunting land?
You know, I think I would like to reiterate what I think is the most important and what I feel about my job and what I help people do every day. And that's help walk them through the whole process, not just a part of it, but the whole thing from beginning to end, from their financing to finding the property to writing the offer to getting it closed, sitting at the closing table and working it through. So my point is to take your time and go out and do your research and find out who knows what about that particular area that you're looking in. And that's my best piece of advice. Get somebody on your side who's a professional and knows what they're doing.
Oh, good.
And make sure that the cabin, or it's not going to take up so much time that you don't actually get to enjoy the outdoors.
Well, that's why, yes. I'm really pro you, Andy, purchasing. Yeah.
I love friends with cabins.
Yes, I've become their best buddies.
Oh, all right. Well, as always, it's been a great conversation, and you know, we got turkey season starting this week, so we're gonna have plenty to talk about in the upcoming weeks. But before the end of the show,
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, we'll have plenty to talk about. I just don't know if it'll be you getting a turkey. And you know, good best of luck to you, Pete, out there, and Patrick getting a turkey this upcoming week.
Appreciate that.
And before we run out of time, we do still have enough time for Dave's interesting facts.
Pete, this is where I try to stump Andy,
and he succeeds at it.
You know, we've been talking about vacation land and vacation properties. I've got just a couple of interesting log cabin facts. I'm going to test you, Andy, to see what you know about.
Little do you know, I know everything.
Okay, great. How many of our U.S. presidents were actually born in a log cabin?
7.
How did you know that?
I told you I know everything.
Okay.
That was just a lucky guess.
That's the, okay, I need a calendar to write this down. Well, can you name them?
Lincoln.
That's one.
And the other 6.
Any guesses?
No.
Pete, any guesses?
Boy, that's a tough one.
Well, I'll tell you. Andrew Jackson, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, James Buchanan, of course, Abraham Lincoln, what you got, Ulysses S. Grant, and James Garfield. You've heard of the classic children's construction toy Lincoln Logs, haven't you, Andy?
I have. I still play with them.
Do you know what year they were developed?
1917.
You're so close. Only off by 1 year.
Really?
Yeah, it's 1916.
I think I remember seeing it on the girl's box somewhere in the teens there.
Well, who created them?
Lincoln. No?
Well, they were his logs.
They were his logs. The tree created them. Oh, it was a tree.
Think about this. Who's a great architect?
I don't know. From the early 1900s? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard of Frank Lloyd Wright?
I've heard that name.
Well, it was his son, John Lloyd Wright.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And finally, you like pancakes, don't you?
I love pancakes.
You ever hear of log cabin syrup?
I have.
Do you know who it was named after?
Abraham Lincoln.
You are correct. You are on a roll.
This is a good show.
Did you see my notes today?
Somehow I didn't. I'm just lucky. Or I've been studying everything that it could have been.
Do you know who came up with log cabin syrup?
No. I was going to try and make a funny guess, but I got nothing.
Well, do you know what state it was developed in?
Wisconsin.
No.
No. Illinois.
Minnesota.
No, all right.
Patrick Tull.
There we go.
And what year did he introduce log cabin syrup?
First of all, Dave, I feel like you're really stretching to have these questions be about log cabins. But I'm going to go with 1962.
You are extremely incorrect.
Good, it's about time.
Pete, you want to take a quick guess?
Let's see. How about 1972?
Go back a little more.
Oh, it's the other direction.
Yeah.
How about 54?
No, 1887.
Wow, it was probably real maple syrup back then.
Yeah. So it's over 101 years old.
There we go.
So that's today's interesting.
All right. Well, we'd like to remind you next week to tune in to On Tap with Corey and Ira and find out everything going on in the beer scene in southern Minnesota. As always, the show will be archived on KYMNradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Thanks again to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page. And, of course, to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. Thank you, Pete. We appreciate it.
Gentlemen, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Pete.
And don't forget, until next time,
get out there and enjoy the outdoors, everyone. This has been Northfield Outdoors.
Thanks.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.